Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in the show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. Everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Birchie. Hope Chapman's here.
Hello.
You can find her work at jezuotaku.com, and we're joined by a couple of special guests. Haven't had one of them on the show in a very long time. It's the co-host of Anime World Order, Gerald Rathcomb's here.
Hey, everybody.
And first time, long time, maybe, the host of the Greatest Movie Ever podcast and writer for otakuusa.com, it's Paul Chapman. How's it going, man?
Hey, glad to be here. No relation to Hope.
Yeah, we should point that out.
Very common last name.
Many Chapmans in this world. Yeah. It's a very common name.
Well, we live a block away from Chapman Avenue, so.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so do I, actually.
Huh. Super common. So this is a single issue show. Haven't done these a lot, but we had some we wanted to kind of dig into. But before we get to that... Since it's been so long since we've had Gerald on and Paul, we've never had you on. I kind of wanted to see if there was anything you guys have been watching this season that you were particularly fond of, and if there's anything you've seen recently that you just wanted to recommend. So I guess we'll start with Gerald on that one.
Let's see. Well, I've been trying to keep up with a few things here and there. As for this season, I watched I checked out an episode. I guess the only episode out so far of the new Gundam Fighter show, which one of my favorite Gundam things ever was Gunpla Builders, because it was the most accessible Gundam they've done in a long time. And this was really just kind of like a card battle show for Gundam, which I kind of guess is what they were kind of going for, but not necessarily what I'm looking for. So I don't know if I'm going to keep going with that. And let's see, what else this season? That there was that wrestling show, which probably the less said about, the better.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. Other than that, I'm trying to just kind of catch up on shows from the last season. Like Gargantia I'm still watching, which is a beautiful-looking show, even if it's basically kind of a ripoff of Orgus, but still a gorgeous show.
Mm-hmm.
That's in terms of, like, anime, I suppose.
Cool. Gundam Build Fighters thing is even more how to buy action figure man than usual Gundam.
Yeah. I mean, Gunpla Builders was ridiculous, but at least there was kind of a wink to the camera. Like, one of the guys in the show rode around on a horse, and he had, like, two companions who just ran behind the horse the entire time. Just, like, ridiculous things like that. And like this show seems to attempt to be a little bit more grounded, which I don't think it should try to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's Tomino's. I don't know if he's writing on it or
because I can understand what they're saying. I'm sure he's not. I believe it's Yosuke Kuroda, who's done a lot of stuff. And I mean, the very least I can say about him is that he's better than Tomino.
Now, may I ask, is this a show that is entirely dependent on you? Like, all of the humor is dependent on whether you're familiar with Gundam or not, like Sergeant Frog levels of Gundam in jokes or what?
I think that there are fewer Gundam in-jokes in this than there are in Sergeant Frog. It seems like this seems like baby's first Gundam.
It's also not trying to be funny ever. Like, it's super straight face. There's like no jokes in it. It's hardly any jokes in it at all.
I couldn't tell because I've just seen like some screen caps that out of context struck me as humorous. So.
It seems very much like, oh, you might have seen these model kits in the store. Watch this show and, go out and buy them and, got to build them all. So it seems very much like, card, Yu-Gi-Oh! Gundam.
Great. Paul?
As for myself, I'm really the wrong person to ask about what you've been watching in the current anime season, because I'm always at least a full season behind. I don't have a subscription model to Crunchyroll because I'm too poor at the moment. I just recently started watching an almost finished Humanity Has Declined, for example. And the only show in recent memory I can think of that I followed as it was released on a weekly basis was a woman called Fujiko Mine. So yeah, I was following Attack on Titan for a little while, but like my brain couldn't handle that show. I kept interpreting all of the dramatic moments as having comedic timing. And that got me in trouble with the fans.
Paul, you are so broken. You are broken.
My brain does not work properly.
Are you not watching Kill la Kill?
I would be watching Kill la Kill if the first episode was currently available for non-subscription members. Like I said, I need to do like that Crunchyroll subscription, if only for the sake of my sanity and not having to watch the same commercial three times in a row.
Well, I don't know, man. $7 a month. You know, you're going to have to get a second job to afford that kind of luxury.
Well, you're talking to a person who's a full-time writer, and I made $7,000 in 2012.
Okay.
So trying to live on that is exceptionally difficult. And
But as of right now, Kill la Kill, the first episode's free, so... I expected Gerald to immediately come out of the gate with that one.
Last time I checked, it was only a premium.
Yeah, I don't know why I forgot to mention that, but yeah, totally keeping up on Kill la Kill. I haven't watched the second episode yet. That's an anime night thing, but it is. I love it so far.
I've heard a lot of good things about it, but then I think Elaine Mendez compared it to Dead Leaves, and I was like, ooh.
It is a lot more stylized than, say, Gurren Lagann or I don't want to say Panty and Stocking, but it is more Dead Leaves styled than
Now, when you say that, are you talking purely in terms of the visuals or in terms of the storytelling? Because the storytelling in Dead Leaves is what killed it.
Storytelling makes a bit more sense than Dead Leaves did, I think. I wasn't a big fan of Dead Leaves, but yeah, I think going back, it's interesting to just see, like, you know, this guy's early work. But yeah, I mean, I'm not a big fan of Dead Leaves, and I like Kill la Kill a lot so far.
Mm-hmm. I definitely do want to check it out.
So, Hope, we know you're recovering from Future Diary.
Well, yeah, there's that.
And the 2,500-word review that got posted.
Yeah, I was like, well, I want to make sure I cover all my bases. 5 hours later. yeah, but, I mean, apart from that, I watched a butt ton of shit from, this past season. I don't know, I was trying to think, like, man, what didn't I see? But I guess the stuff that stuck with me the most was, Free, the continuing, watch of Attack on Titan, and, Watsumoto, which we're talking about today, and The Eccentric Family. So, I guess, like, of that stuff, I don't know. There was a lot of good stuff, I mean, mostly, I thought it was funny you mentioned, like, oh, well, I can't really keep up with Attack on Titan because everything that's supposed to be, like, dramatic struck me as funny. That show is really funny. I mean, the stuff that's supposed to make you, like, shirk back in horror and weep is actually really, really hilarious. So, I mean, like, I enjoy it on both levels. There'll be a moment, you know, where I'm giggling at the same time as I'm going, horror. It's laughing at the same time, which I think is its greatest appeal. I imagine if you can't kind of laugh at that show, if you're completely humorless about it, then you've lost some of the magic, because it's, it's kind of fun at the same time.
Yeah,
but.
Just some of the looks of the Titans alone.
God, yeah.
And I mean, even like the marketing in Japan for it seems to acknowledge how sort of ridiculous they are.
Mm-hmm. Gimpy running.
Yeah, and I mean, they're even releasing, like, oh, the Attack on Titan, like, bread and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess what my big disappointment with the show was when, well, I guess I probably shouldn't do, when they do that thing at the beginning of the show that catches everybody by surprise, and you think that a very important character has been, you know, summarily murdered, I kind of wish that, you know, well, I don't want to go into too many spoilers because I'm sure there are plenty of people out there that still haven't been watching Attack on Titan, but let's just say the show went in a direction that I wish they hadn't. I thought they were going to go in a very brave direction, and instead it became, you know, typical shonen kind of show. So,
yeah. I don't know that I would agree with that necessarily. I mean, I like what they did just for my own personal taste in entertainment. I thought it was more like weird and carnal and cool to do that weird crazy thing that they did. At the same time, if they had not, if they needed to do something like that at that point, because people have talked about the pacing of Attack on Titan, and it is a little glacial. not that nothing happens. Something's always happening, but it'll get to points where it's just people talking and looking around the room very slowly, and it's deliberate. I would say deliberate is a good word for the pacing in Attack on Titan. Like, people talk about how it's slow. It's just sort of like a tortoise that's in one direction, like determinedly rocking in one direction. And if they had not done that right then I think I probably would have dismissed it. I was actually episodes 1 through 4 still watching it just because it was unique, but I didn't care yet. Like, episodes 1 through 4, I was like, this is really cool to look at, and it's unique, so I'll keep tabs on it, but I don't really care yet. So that event is what made me care.
Yeah, it hooks you, but then the way they follow up on it, I thought, was kind of a cop-out with the dramatic possibilities, the directions they could have gone in, but...
Right.
You know, well, I'm not the writer, so.
I actually think that. Oh, sorry, go up.
To speak in broad, not spoilery terms, you mean you wish they had committed to a significant character death?
Yes.
Okay.
Rather than well, what they did do.
Yeah.
So, won't spoil it for the people that haven't watched it. I'm normally quite terrible about that. If you listen to my podcast, it's spoilers ahoy. So I'm trying to rein myself in here.
Yeah.
You checked out. I think the one thing you saw from this new season was Kill la Kill, right?
Yeah. I haven't jumped into this new season yet because I try to keep my brain in the past one because I'm not quite done with it yet. But the only thing I saw was the first episode of Kill la Kill, and it's pretty much. I hate to say exactly what I was expecting, because that diminishes how fun it is and how cool it is, and it is neat. I liked it, but at the same time, it was like, well, this is probably going to be like a Dead Leavesy Gurren Lagann. I dismissed Panty and Stocking and stuff that he wasn't really... I tried to look at the writing team, and it was like, okay, this is the writing team from Gurren Lagann as well as the director, and I'm like, okay, so it's Imaishi, but it's also the writers, the Gainax writers. So, gonna go ahead and because Panty and Stocking, like, I didn't really like that show, but it was wildly variable depending on who wrote the comedy episode, because they did a bunch of different, you know, there was a bunch of different voices and perspectives. Gurren Lagann was a little more uniform, and Kill la Kill seems to be like that, seems to be so far. And I was like, oh, this is exactly what I was expecting. I liked it. I was drawn in a little more than I was by Gurren Lagann just because of the aesthetic. It's not Super Robot, which, you know, Super Robot's fine, and that was a fun show, but I just, the basic
it's
aesthetic.
It's like their personal thing.
Yeah, it's a personal thing of, okay, this seems a little more, like, hard to place. It's its own weird thing.
Yeah, I watched the show, and it seemed a lot like they were pulling from an old show called Otoko Juku. And then I saw an interview, and they said, oh, yeah, we pulled, like, a whole bunch from Otoko Juku. Mm-hmm. And of course, that means nothing to anyone who hasn't seen that show. But it was very interesting to see kind of that weird older aesthetic in the newer show.
Weird. The very first thing I thought of was this weird old shit. I can't remember what it's called, though. It's a weird old OVA about... I don't even remember.
Blazing Transfer Student.
Yes, thank you. Blazing Transfer Student. I was like, okay, so this is sort of like Blazing Transfer Student if it was extended into an entire series. Thank you. I was like, I will eventually remember this.
Totally saw a lot of that too, and that's saying. I think that's Gainax as well, and which I think some of those people came from. So
yeah,
I can totally see that.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's interesting. There's not much to say, having seen only one episode, but it's pretty much exactly what I was expecting, even if that means it was neat. But it was, you know, I don't know. It was like, okay, this will be fun. I don't know if the problem is, like, I want, I guess, a story that has a little bit more oomph to it. And Imaishi is always sort of like really over the top, crazy, childish, you know, and so that. The oomph may not ever be there, so I just have to enjoy the over-the-top crazy childish and go with it.
Because
there's some value in that. It's just, you know, I would like some depth, but I'm probably not going to get it, and that's okay.
I guess we'll see, and hopefully it doesn't pull, like, I don't know, Sword Art Online or something. Everyone forgets about it.
Yeah, Sword Art Online. yeah, I watched a lot of stuff. I didn't write a lot of reviews this time around just because I was late to the party on most things, and frankly, the fire hose of content that came out over the last week basically killed me, because, you know, I gotta edit and post and format and do everything on everyone else's reviews. And so that's five people, you know, if six shows come out in a day, those five people review those six shows, I have 30 articles to edit in one day, which is a gigantic headache. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have a lot of time to write my own stuff. But I watched a whole lot, and yeah, Kill la Kill's really good, although I'm kind of with Hope in that it sucks to say, like, this is what I was expecting this to be.
When there's only one episode out so far.
Well, but it sounds like you're saying, like, yeah, okay, of course Imaishi makes this. Like, but that's what he makes. Like, that's a stock and trade. Like, he is wildly creative and everything, but, you know, I was like, this is neat. All right, I'll watch this. So, you know, cool, that's something to watch. I was a little let down by Samurai Flamenco. I thought that was kind of lame. I might give it another episode, but I wasn't too impressed with it. It's a very ugly show. Like, it's really drab and kind of... I don't know what I was expecting out of that show, but what they gave me was not it. And then I watched some of the horrible fan service stuff, and while it was all horrible fan service stuff, so... What do you expect?
You kill Supreme!
Yeah, right, exactly. So
so we're all just sort of sitting around praying for the release of Space Dandy, huh?
Pretty much. I hope that's,
save us.
I hope that's going to be as fun as it looks like it will be.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, hopefully. But to get to the point, we are here today to talk specifically about a show called Watamote, or as it's known in its incredibly long title, no matter how I see it, no matter how I look at it, it's you guys' fault I'm not popular. Which, Paul, you said you basically really wanted to talk about this show, and Gerald, you hopped on board, and Hope and I both watched the whole thing. And I do think there's a lot more to discuss about this show than there is with your average anime series. And so people understand the premise, if people listening haven't seen this show. There's not much to spoil about it, because not a lot happens in it. It's not a plot-driven show. Mm-hmm. But it's about a girl named, what's her name?
Tomoki's her younger brother.
Okay. Yeah. Tomoko, who is, basically has a crippling social anxiety. She is socially so awkward and stuck inside her own head. Like, I kind of alternate between calling her Sylvia Plath-chan and Holden Caulfield-chan. Like, and she kind of goes between those two personalities, which is exactly as pleasant as it sounds. But the entire show is just, we are inside her head. It's 12 episodes of living inside this girl's head. And I guess I'll start with just what I want is your general impression of the show and whether or not you liked it and found it entertaining. So I guess that's my first question, and I guess we'll start with Paul here.
Yes, I did like the show. I enjoyed it a lot. I am of mixed feelings on how I'm supposed to interpret it and how I'm supposed to experience this particular piece of entertainment, though, because the reactions I've seen from other people online are sort of foreign to me. A lot of people apparently watch this movie and say that there's something fun or nostalgic about it, or they're laughing at Tomoko's horrendous social awkwardness and various neuroses and paranoia and narcissism and so on and so forth. But for myself, it was more a purgative experience in that I identify entirely too strongly with the main character, because aside from, you know, biological sex differences and the fact that she's a fictitious cartoon, I mean, this could have been my life when I was in high school. So for me, it's more of, I'm not laughing at her pain. I'm experiencing the pain that she's going through and remembering what it was like when I was as bad as she is.
Okay, yeah, that's, I feel like that is the most common response that I've seen, is people identifying very strongly with her neuroses and her paranoia and narcissism and all that stuff, because either they were like that in high school or they're still like that now.
Oh, I still am. It's just I'm not as bad as I used to be.
Well, and the biggest praise that my biggest praise of the show is that it is expertly written. Like that character is basically, I think, perfectly realized. I think anyway. Gerald, what do you think?
I enjoyed the show an enormous amount too, but it was tremendously painful for me to watch. Not because I identified with it. I mean, I don't have any sort of diagnosed mental disorder like that, and I don't believe I was anywhere near that bad in high school. I think part of it was I'm just watching it and really trying to root for her, and just hoping that, you know, things will go better for her in some way. And invariably, they pretty much always don't. I mean, there's kind of this interesting little light at the end of the tunnel at the very end of the show, which I actually quite liked. It certainly isn't identification. I really liked the character a whole lot.
It's interesting. So you found yourself rooting for her to succeed and to get over her issues and actually not totally fuck up the situation that she's might be.
Yeah, I mean, I know people who have this sort of level of social anxiety, and I guess it's not something you necessarily get over. I'm hoping that at some point she learns to manage it, or at least, you know, has little victories here and there. I guess, I don't know if the writers, I guess it's a group of two women who write it, I don't know if they come from this experience or maybe have friends who come from this experience, but it is like astonishingly realistic to what I have seen.
Hope, what's your take?
My experience is, I think, somewhere between what you two have described, in that it was, for me, it's heavy self-identification, but it's something that I've forgotten about and sort of left behind and don't... I mean, like, not that all of Tomoko's weird traits are completely out of my system. Like, there's echoes of the awkwardness and stuff like that I still carry with me. But, I was pretty much exactly like her in middle school, not high school. High school, I was already kind of coming out of it. I had some of those bad habits, but I was largely healed and had friends and shit. Middle school, I was exactly like her, and so it's a little terrifying. Like, so when I watch it, it's cathartic. It's sort of like bleeding out old memories and stuff like that. But it's also it's not painful for me because it's stuff that I'm like, okay, well, this isn't really me anymore. But I remember it. It's funny, like. I genuinely find the show funny. I know a lot of people are like, oh, I don't find it funny at all. I just sort of, you know, like, watch it to torture myself, but in a, you know, cathartic way. And I'm like, no, I do laugh. I laugh pretty much every episode, even when kind of crying. I guess, like, a good example is what I thought was one of the most, probably the most heartbreaking episode, which is when her cousin comes to visit. Her cousin that, like, looked up to her and stuff like that when she was little and is now a little more grown up and still looks up to her, but they haven't seen each other for a while. And it's a slow, it's this slow change of character between the relationship between the two of them. And it is funny, but it's just heartbreaking. And I remember making, like, that distinctive noise that I've made during Attack on Titan, too, where it's just this mixture between a laugh and a oh, you know, really hard to watch. So yeah, I mean, it's a comedy to me, but it's only funny because it's like I was this person, I did some of these things. Like of the situations that they put her in that are really outrageous, it's like, oh, that's really crazy and that would never happen to anybody. And a couple of the situations are really outrageous, coincidental, but many of them aren't. Like, many of them, as outrageous as they seem, are like, oh god, yeah, that, you know, something very similar happened, etc. It's, yeah. So that's, I guess, the appeal to me, but...
I found it fascinating, just as a character study that was just really, really well realized. I'm not like that. I've never been like that. I didn't really have a lot of social anxiety, even in junior high or high school. I usually had a group of friends. You know, I was a nerd, but that's mm-hmm. a different kind of horrible awkwardness than having this kind of social anxiety where you're living inside the horrible, nightmarish trap that is your own brain 24 right. hours a day. but I found the show just to be fascinating because it was such a fully realized character. And also, I've known so many people like that. Like Gerald was saying, you know, you recognize that personality type immediately. And if you've been around it a lot, and you've dealt with it, and you've had friends like that, friends who relied on you, that needed... You know, I had friends like that that would need to use me as a shoulder to tell me about their problems. Mm-hmm. And the way she talks about her problems is exactly the way those people would talk to me about their problems. It is this just painful level of self-absorbed neuroses and paranoia that combine into this horrible, crippling thing that... It's just so it was just so recognizable to me. And as the show went on, I mean, I'll have to admit, like, ultimately I found the show, I don't think it needed 12 episodes. I think it could have been shorter than it is. And it started getting really repetitive, I thought.
Well, it's a one-joke show.
It is. I mean, but Gerald kept saying, like, you know, or Gerald said something to the effect of, like, I wanted her to experience small victories. And it's like every couple episodes they give her a small victory.
Yeah.
And that drives the show forward. It's just, I eventually, you know, when the show first came out and I basically said, like, okay, I'm not going to watch this because I don't really need to spend 22 minutes a day inside this girl's bell jar. Like, I don't really want to do that. That doesn't sound pleasant, but I kept being drawn back to it. It helps that Hope was basically talking it up and saying, like, hey, this is really good. So I kept going back to it and then eventually found myself wanting to watch the whole thing. I didn't find it funny. The stuff that I found funny was when she was actually being funny. So the Holden Caulfield moments where she's being shitty to the people around her in her head, I thought were funny. it's funny how rotten she is. Like...
She's like when she couldn't find her umbrella and then starts to, you know, go maniacal on everybody and wants to kill anyone who stole an umbrella.
Stuff like that, or just when she was excessively calling the people around her shitheads, and then at one point she says, I hope you're all perpetually reborn as shit. And, like, that's funny. And there was an episode... where she goes to a coffee shop and doesn't know what to order. She orders a gigantic cappuccino and then totally fucks it up by putting milk and coffee and chocolate and honey and stuff in it and then spills it everywhere. Like, that's funny. Especially there's a line where she dumps a bunch of honey in it and says something ineffective, like, only a bear could drink this. And I, for some reason, thought that was hilarious. But only when the character's actually trying to be funny did I find it funny. The portrayal of her crippling social anxiety, I did not find... I don't think it was funny. I don't even think it was really played for laughs most of the time.
See, that's the big thing. Like, there was a Kotaku article where a guy named Watamote as the cruelest anime that he's seen this season. Yeah. And I was reading this article and I'm like, there's a point here. I can understand where he's coming from with this perspective, but it really seems to me that a lot of this is not played for laughs. It's really supposed to draw you into sympathy with just the horror that is this girl's daily existence, where she wants to be loved and appreciated and recognized. You know, she wants that part of the hierarchy of needs fulfilled for her, but she's unsure how to reach that social plateau, and she lashes out mentally at other people. It's like one moment she wants to be popular and make friends, and the next everyone around her is a bitch and an asshole, mm-hmm. you know, and she's too good for this shit. Mm-hmm. So I guess that is the big question. I mean, are we supposed to be laughing at her, or are we supposed to be laughing with her? Are we supposed to be laughing at all?
I think, for me personally, I feel like I can say my interpretation of this show, definitively, we are not supposed to be laughing at her. I do not think the show plays her that way. I don't think that's the way it's written. It really doesn't feel that way to me. Otherwise, it would be a cruel mess of a show.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have... I don't feel like I would have emotionally responded to that. I feel like I'm an empathetic person and would not have responded to a show where it felt like it was trying to get me to laugh at this person's pain.
Yeah.
Because it's such effectively rendered pain. You know, it's funny in moments, but I never was laughing at her. Like, that was...
Yeah.
I feel like that's not... personally, I feel like that's not even an argument. Like, no way is the show being cruel to that character. I don't know. What do you think?
No, I saw that article, too, and I remember, like, wanting to respond to this guy, but there's no, like, good way to respond to it, because I was like, oh, it's Kotaku.
Then it would be in the Kotaku comments section.
Yeah, no thanks. And I was like, it's Kotaku and clickbait. So this is my response to that guy. His basic argument was that this was cruel because... this is so real, and this should not be portrayed as, like, something to be scorned at or whatever, showing this level of, you know, this level of pain for this character shouldn't be funny. It should be played very seriously. And my thought is, like, you're obviously, like, you're supposed to be laughing with her, like, laughing at the situation. At no point are you mocking this person. Like, if the entire show rests on wanting to follow her, how can we just, you know... laugh at her personally. That's not the case. I would say to this person, like, if you can't laugh at yourself, like, which clearly this was the problem, that this person self-identified really heavily. If you can't laugh at yourself, then what can you? You know, and so to some extent, like, I think Tomoko's story, like, Watamote is, I think it is, I don't know the women that wrote it, but I'm positive it is partially autobiographical. Like, maybe it's about somebody they know and not actually about their adolescence, but it seems like it's about something they experience personally, because it's just so, it's just so intimate that it's like, oh, this has got to be partially autobiographical.
Yeah, I agree, yeah.
And so I think, like, they're exercising that, and they have a sense of humor about it. Like, they're not super serious, but I think that, you know, that's healthy to be able to exercise those demons and in a way that's light and accessible and you know, enjoyable and fun, even though it's really painful too. So yeah, I don't think we're supposed to be laughing at Tomoko. I think we're just supposed to be given some levity about something that is very, you know, pretty common for a lot of adolescents and sucks really hard. You know, adding some levity to it retroactively makes it less painful.
I guess there are a mix of people who actually have social anxiety who have watched this, who some seem to like it a lot and some seem to hate it then. Like, if that guy who wrote the Kotaku article has that and self-identifies.
Yeah, no, I saw people that self-identified with the show and like, they were like, no, it's not that I don't get it. I get it. I can't watch that. Like, that's too close for comfort. And I'm like, I get it, but... you know, if the Kotaku guy, like, wrote a ragey article about how this is really hateful, so that's a little different. It's like, fuck you, buddy.
well, going to Kotaku for anime stuff is kind of a waste.
yeah. So, I wanted to get everyone's take on her relationship with her younger brother, which I thought was ultimately not particularly fleshed out. I think that was one of the weakest parts of the show.
I'm surprised that you say that, honestly, because that's actually one of my favorite parts, and I think best realized examples of a sibling relationship in anime that I've seen.
I was so glad so worried that it was going to turn into, like, she was going to, like, want to bang her brother or something, and it didn't turn into that.
Well, so the thing that I liked about that relationship was, A, it didn't turn into that, which was a huge relief, and B, it was consistent with her relationships with everyone else, because part of this character's completely dysfunctional brain is that any kind of affection turns into a sexual attraction for her. And it's not that she understands anything about sex or sexual relationships, but she's played so many video games and is so steeped in bullshit pop culture stuff that...
also, she's just hit puberty.
Yeah, so she's completely wired to turn everything into a sexual thing. Even her relationships with her close friends, even though she's not gay. Her one close friend, she's constantly sexualizing her relationship with it, because that's just how she interprets relationship. Any kind of physical affection or any kind of emotional affection means sexual relationship to her. So they could have gone there with the brother, but they take it basically right up to the point of sort of inappropriate, unwanted affection that ultimately is just self-serving. Like, she's just doing that to make herself happy. But it doesn't... ultimately, like, in the end, I felt like that relationship with her younger brother. I didn't think it was particularly fleshed out, but please tell me why I'm wrong.
Well, again, lived experience. When I was in high school, I remember having a similar relationship with my younger sister, my youngest sister, actually, Catherine, just sort of role reversed, where I was incredibly jealous of her because she had all of these friends and she was athletic. She played sports. She seemed to have her life together in a way that was completely foreign to me because I was depressed and neurotic. So, you know, I was incredibly jealous of her having all of these friends and everything seemingly coming so effortlessly to her. So I can totally identify with how they play that out with Tomoko and Tomoki in the television show. I also like how they're casually spiteful to one another because that's very true to my relationship with my siblings. I mean, I love all of my brothers and sisters, but we do rib one another pretty mercilessly and always have since we were growing up, even now when we're all adults and some of us have children of our own and stuff. So for me, I felt that it captured that family relationship that is a combination of love and affection and frustration and jealousy. And I thought it just nailed it, at least for me.
I thought that in general, the family was interestingly fleshed out for how little we really saw of them. Like, there was like one scene with the father that I thought would go one totally different direction, and they actually wrote it in a way that I thought was a lot more realistic.
Mm-hmm.
The scene where the father walks in on her when she's asleep with like the massager in her hand and stuff.
And the BL game on the television.
And the BL game. And I thought he was going to turn into anime dad and just go crazy and just like start screaming and stuff. Instead, he just, you know,
quietly tucks her in and pretends.
Tucks her
not
in, turns it off, tucks her in and leaves her alone.
Yeah, pretend you did not just find your child masturbating kind of thing.
Yeah. I thought, you know, that's probably what, you know, a reasonable parent would do.
Yeah, and the fact that her mother is clearly worried about her but doesn't know how to deal with what her daughter is going through. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
Well, you know, it's funny, like, you mentioned anime dad, and that got me immediately thinking, you know, the show doesn't have a lot of anime characters in it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I know what you mean now. Yeah.
I think that's why there's so much to talk about with it, because it's not just a collection of stereotypes. These are all relatively realistically written characters, you know, with the exception of, like, her big
best
boob
friend. Yeah.
And yeah, like that stuff is kind of like, all right, well, like I get it. They're trying to contrast her with someone else. And the show eventually dips into, I think, pretty sharp satire of anime in general.
Oh, absolutely.
And then the satire is very sharp, and we'll get to that. But the main cast, the family, especially the lead character, they're not anime characters. Like they are, they're characters in an anime, but they are not anime characters.
And every time Tomoko tries to be an anime character in real life, you know, trying to apply her pop culture experience to actual high school living, it's a disaster.
Yeah, right. She can't keep it up because it's a facade. And ultimately that did wind up being the thing that got really repetitive to me, where it's like, okay, you're trying to be anybody but yourself and you're taking cues from these dumb shows that you're watching and it's failing. And there's a lot of episodes where it seems like that's the focus. And I kept saying like, all right, this again.
But when a character fundamentally doesn't know who they are and they're desperately flailing and struggling to find their own identity, even if they don't know that that's what they're trying to do.
Yeah,
I don't really have a problem with that.
The thing that I noticed most about the brother is sort of related to that is where she there's a moment where it's summer break and her mother's making her clean the house and she's like, well, why don't you make my brother do it, you know, like make him do it, and her mother says, your brother cleans his room all the time and started making his own meals and all this stuff, and instead of that just shutting her up and making her go, oh, well, I guess I gotta take care of my shit then, she immediately runs up to her brother's room, throws open the door and says, is like, how dare you betray me? Like, why, what, why are you being responsible and doing all this shit? Like, what, are you a pussy? Are you the lead in a light novel or something? Like, why are you doing housework? You know, we're supposed to be in this together. Like, he has shamed her by being responsible. Like, which is, you know, it... There's something really something really fucked up about that. That basically, like, I thought I could trust you. You need to be, like, more, you know, you need to be as shitty as I am or worse. Like, anybody who's better than her, even her own family, is immediately just, like, scorned for it. which is pretty awful, because, you know, it means basically, like, she doesn't admire any, but you don't see Tomoko honestly admiring anybody. You see her just envious of everything. She doesn't ever look at anything and say, I aspire to do this, or whatever. It's always just a matter of, if anything's better than her, then she's like, well, first of all, you know, it sucks because it's better.
You're an asshole.
Yeah, you're an asshole, and you suck, and everything about you is awful, but I want what you have. And it's, you know.
Now look at all these people putting on these trendy facades, yeah, when deep inside she wants to be popular.
And I thought that was very honest, because if you were to ask people like that, and again, I'm not being condemning of them, I used to be one, you know, that still have little portions of that in my personality, I'm sure. Like, if you were to ask people, like, how they define themselves at that age, and they'll say stuff like, well, you know, I was really lonely and nerdy, and I just wanted somebody to like me or whatever. And it's like, no, I know from experience, like, having been in a similar position and known people like you, if people reached out to you, you would condemn them for anything that they had that you didn't. It wasn't a matter of, oh, I just wanted a friend, and if somebody was nice to me, I would have been the best friend ever. It's like, no, you would have immediately used anything about that person that you were jealous of to be cruel to them. And that's I think, the bridge that Watamote hasn't crossed, really, but if it did, that would be interesting.
It does in the manga.
Okay, as if she gets a friend, like, she would be a terrible friend.
Well, basically what happens is they introduce another character who's just as bad off as she is, a girl named Kotomi Komiyama, who's friends, they're mutual friends through Yui, but they hate each other.
Oh.
And that basically gives Tomoko someone to treat the way she wishes she could treat everybody, and vice versa. Ooh. And it's pretty biting.
Oh my.
That sounds interesting. Yeah that's I think the way that I sort of summed that up is, like, look at all these stupid phony shitheads. I desperately need them to love me.
Yes, basically.
Without giving anything in return. That's sort of the asterisk on the end of that sentence for that personality type, is without giving them any love or affection or anything in return. Like, this is a person who is unfailingly selfish, like, but it's so relatable, like, that the character's so well written that it's like, you get it, you understand that personality type, I think, watching the show. And, you know, I would hope that even people who were watching it laughing, who did laugh at her, which I think would require a tremendous lack of empathy, maybe through the act of watching the show would understand that personality type a little bit more. Maybe they have people in their life who they're like, oh, this person I know is exactly like this. Maybe it'll help them understand their thought process a little bit more. I don't know.
Oh, believe me, after I saw this, I messaged people that I know who were like that and just said, look, if you ever need anyone to talk to for anything, just let me know. I'm here. Because if it was anything like she was going through, I don't want my friends going through that.
Right. Yeah, so I wanted to talk a little bit about the satire that the show engages in. We were talking about this last night, and I sort of see the show a little bit as kind of a, in its satirical elements, it's a little bit of an anti-Ora emo, and obviously what it's directly mocking a lot of the time is Haruhi Suzumiya. But I saw it as a little bit of an anti-Ora emo, because The character, even though she's not like a little sister fetish character, I feel like what they're kind of trying to do with this character is the quiet girl, the bitchy girl, they're not actually like these anime stereotypes. They're like this. This is what they're like, and you don't really, maybe you don't want that. Like, maybe that's not
You don't understand, Zach. She plays those yaoi games, and if she played, like, my games,
yeah,
my Emoto games, then she would be like that. But she doesn't really exist. She's just 2D. But
I think
girls who play yaoi games are creepy.
I was going to say, I think the easiest way to describe this, and perhaps this is where I start drawing flames from the ANN boards, is you could say that this show is, in many sense, the anti-Moe. Because yeah, here you have this character that is similar to the Ore Emo. She's playing the erotic game. She loves anime and stuff like that. And she is a miserable misanthrope and not the kind of person that you would necessarily want to be or be close to.
Right. Yeah.
So
she's not going to be your waifu, in other words.
No. Although I have seen plenty of fan art that does try to sort of sexualize her.
Of course,
in
but that it's gonna
ways that are creepy and inappropriate.
That's because it is something that is created.
It's the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's Rule 34.
Yeah, Gerald's got it. Yeah. it exists in popular media, therefore.
Yes.
But really, though, they did make every effort to make her as unpleasant as possible with the giant bags underneath her eyes that are like throwing off rainbow colors practically and, mm-hmm. yeah. you know, constantly being disheveled. And, yeah.
The brother had that too. I took that as just a like, but his weren't like discolored. And I took it as a sign of general exhaustion.
I can see that just with her. Every time he talks to her.
Not only one of the only anime to portray this, but one of the only anime to portray this and also portray it well, because they don't explain what it is when they first show you it, but I knew instantly. I was like, oh, Tomoko at one point has really greasy hair, and they put weird bubble rainbows on her black hair, which for some reason like gives it that like that sheen that you associate with somebody who hasn't washed their hair in a while. So it just has like swirly psychedelic rainbows that go up and down her black hair as she walks in the sunlight, and it's like, oh, right, she needs to wash her hair. Like,
oh wow, I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, well, it's a plot point in one of the episodes. Okay. Her brother stares at her and he's like, oh god, she hasn't showered in a week.
I mean, some of the references in the show were kind of unusual too, in terms of like what they were referencing. Like, I've never seen a show reference Air Master.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a very direct reference, and I think that part of it was that, you know, if you recognize this reference, then you might be closer to her than you think.
You are part of the problem.
Yeah.
I personally, like, I found the satire to be pretty sharp, and like anime is usually when it tries to do satire, it's usually just kind of lame parody. This actually seemed like pretty sharp satire, just because they had built the character that they had built, and like, I really enjoyed the sequence where she fantasizes about having a do nothing club.
Yeah. Oh god, that was painful.
It was heartbreaking.
That was so painful.
I liked it though, because it was not only is it an incredibly sharp stab at shows that do that fucking exact goddamn thing. Like,
the room she's in is an exact replica of the Haruhi Suzumiya classroom.
Yeah, right. And they're doing nothing, and the song that's playing is like, we're not doing anything. Like, and they're just like drinking coffee and like screwing around on a laptop, and that's it. And to me, like, because the way the character was and the way that they executed that, I thought it was really great satire. Like, I laughed at that. It was one of the funniest things I'd seen in anime in a while.
I laughed, and I was just, oh, that was so hard.
I simply winced at the reveal where she's doing the Pinkie Pie tea party of one at the end of it with her stuffed animals.
Yeah, I knew it was coming, but I just wanted to believe that maybe she would get a little victory. But
right. Okay, that's the funny thing. Is like, if they just played it a little bit, you would have been like, okay, yeah, right. Yeah, when's she going to wake up? But they keep it going for minutes and minutes. And it's like, they fool you just by drawing it out that long. Because at first you're like, haha, it's funny, it's a joke. Like, there's no light music-y, there's no light tea club or whatever the fuck it is. And then it goes on and on. And Anna's like, well, maybe, I don't know, maybe she's reached some kind of catharsis. And just when you've let your guard down, then it goes, and she was dreaming. And it's like, ugh, you went on too long with that. Like, you fooled me. Which I think was the point, because the letdown from it, the is really just intense.
Cool.
Just, they really wanted to make you sad, I guess.
Yeah. They did the job. Man.
Yeah, good stuff. And then eventually, you know, in the last like couple episodes, they start getting really pointed with the whole like, well, if I were in K-On, it'd be like this, or if I were in Haruhi Suzumiya, it'd be like this, or whatever. And You know, I thought it continued to be pretty decent satire, but overall, like, I really liked those elements. I feel like that could have not worked out at all, and it did. Which
I mean, how often do you see that worked out well?
Almost never.
Almost
never. It's usually like Mad Magazine style parody, and you're like, okay.
It's like, hey, check this thing out. It exists. Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Reference humor. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I wanted to know what people's take on the ending. Me personally, I feel like it should have ended at the 11th episode when she gets the hug from the mascot and he gives her a balloon. I feel like it could have ended there because the last episode to me was... I expected it to be anticlimactic, and it was really anticlimactic.
Yeah.
I thought anyway, but I don't know. Gerald, what did you think?
Attack on Titan joke. One of the worst anime to make Attack on Titan joke.
I guess I was maybe hoping for more, but I think at the very, very end of it, when she comes to kind of this little realization, personally, that... I think you know, I didn't mind that it went on a little bit longer. That I guess it for me ended with there is a ray of hope for her, and maybe she'll go with that. Maybe she won't. Again, you know, I guess that's manga or maybe a season two or whatever. But I didn't mind that it went one episode further. At least it, you know, didn't totally ruin it like so many other animes do with going, you know, an episode or two too far.
Mm. Yeah, it was just extra. It didn't retroactively ruin anything. So.
No,
I don't think it was bad. I thought that that moment at the end of episode 11 was kind of a like, oh, what a great place to.
That
end
was
this.
The pinnacle. It was like that's yeah, my peak.
That would have been.
That
great.
Was definitely. That was the
friend out there.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking at it, episode 12, especially the ending sequence of episode 12. Up to the point where they sort of say, well, you know, better luck next time, kiddo. That whole chase scene, which is kind of an Air Master reference, is probably
totally an Air Master reference.
Is the most anime, if you want to use anime as an adjective, of the show, I would say. It's the most anime that it gets when, you know, crazy running and distracted by cats and stuff like that. Kind of typical anime trope type stuff.
And
yes. It definitely could have ended at episode 11, but I think it's one of those things that, you know, they're contractually obligated. They got to put out 12, and they don't yet have enough material from the manga to get into one of the later storylines where there actually is a bit more character development with the character. So, you know,
yeah, the manga only started in January, so I'm quite amazed that they have, you know, even enough material now to do any sort of a show.
Well, they burned through almost all of the manga that exists in the course of those 12 episodes.
Yeah. I mean, from what I understand of Watamote, the manga, I don't follow manga at all. Like, I mean, I only hear about the stuff that is really popular. And despite the title of the book, like, I heard about Watamote from about two or three months after it had come out. People were telling me that were really into manga were just dropping it as, by the way, this is a really unique and awesome thing that you should check out. Like, people were writing articles on it. People were telling me about it. I walked by Akina Kaniya, and it was, like, all over the front thing. And I was like, huh. Like, there were volumes all over, and I was like, I remember this. And then the anime was announced, like, a month after that or something like that. And I was like, huh. So, yeah, I imagine that. I don't know what that means for sales because I haven't actually looked into it, but it must be pretty popular.
Well, so it started off as a web exclusive kind of thing, and it's a million seller already, I think.
The manga is interestingly, the show is a flop.
Yeah.
It is not selling Blu-rays at all, and
but the show is selling a lot of merchandise, it seems like.
Not
so much Blu-rays.
Like, okay, the circle that I the people that I pay attention to on Twitter are very excited about the merchandise for it. I'm not gonna say that means that merchandise is selling really well, but generally you can gauge the popularity of something with the Japanese otaku that determine what we all watch are not buying it. And to me, that's perfectly fitting, because what those guys want is pure escapism, and this show offers you absolutely no escape.
Yeah.
At all. It is not escapism on any level.
I mean, to be fair, the only gauge that I have for that the merchandise is selling well is that when I look on Japanese websites, the merchandise seems to be sold out all over the place. So that's the only metric I have. So I don't actually know how well it's doing.
Well, maybe that means we'll get more of it. Because if it's Blu-ray sales, like, we wouldn't get any more of it, and that made me sad. But, you know.
Well, they'd probably have to wait, like, at least a year just to have the material to turn into 12 episodes here.
Well, we're past the point where the only shows that get filler episodes anymore are Shonen Jump shows, which is great. Mm-hmm. By the way, I don't like it when there's four seasons of something and they only had enough manga for two seasons, so they're two seasons of that are just pure garbage filler.
It's like, are they still in Sky PF?
I wouldn't want them to just keep going with it. Like, if next year we get a nice, you know, another 12 episodes, great, sure, you know, I'm down. It's interesting to me that this show sort of, I don't want to say proves itself, but, it's fitting that it's not selling with the crowd that traditionally buys a lot of anime Blu-rays. It doesn't seem like it does, it doesn't really seem like it's made for that otaku crowd at all. At least it's not pandering to them for even a minute. I don't know.
I don't know either. I mean, I guess my personal hope is that it would maybe be popular with maybe more of the female fan base. Maybe they find something in it. I don't know.
Well,
they
like escapism too.
Yeah, Fujoshi aren't, you know, their tastes don't necessarily differ in terms of, you know, the kind of satisfaction they're looking for.
I guess they're also watching free as well. Like, guys are watching whatever.
Yeah.
I about died when the, I think in the first episode, Tomoko is playing a DS game that's also like a dating sim or something, and there's a back scratching mini game where you're supposed to scratch the dude's back, and the more she scratches his back, he's like, oh! And she flings the DS around across the room because she's like, oh, it's making him come. That's really creepy. It's like, it's too much even for her. And I'm like, that's pretty great. Sometimes those games go too far.
Okay, so we got a bunch of Twitter questions here, so let's go ahead and get to these. All right. Imperious Corey asks, how does Watamote compare to other anime representations of social awkwardness? For example, Welcome to the NHK. Now, I think this is a pretty good comparison. And I hope I'm curious, because you're a big fan of Welcome to the NHK.
Yeah.
How would you compare the two?
I would say Welcome to the NHK is a little more... the stance... Ooh. I think they're both really good representations of. I don't think they're either of them are escapist-y or even exaggerated very much. Like, they're both exaggerated to about the same extent. So I would say they're equals, except the stance, the perspective on Welcome to the NHK is a little more person looking down at these people and going, "Get a fucking job," or, you know, "Get off your ass." It's more sympathetic, but it's also meaner. It's much meaner. While Watamote is less pushing for change and less, it's just saying, this is this person, you know, understand them. Welcome to the NHK is like, you understand them already, we've made this quite clear, now, you know, kind of want to slap them around. It's a little more condemning.
Anyone else have thoughts on that?
I think Hope covered it pretty well there. I mean, NHK was so, especially the manga, was so much more brutal. I would almost, I was almost thinking about this other manga that never got released here called, I think it was Resentiment.
Ah, Resentiment.
Yeah, that was kind of the next level of Welcome to the NHK. Like, it's about this nerdy guy who then, you know, escapes into this virtual world and finds this girl. And even in the virtual world, this girl wants nothing to do with him. And, like, just despises him as well. And there were, like, hints of that as well when I was watching this. I think Welcome to the NHK was a little bit more ridiculous and like trying to be a bit funnier.
Yeah, it's much more like just black comedy. But in its defense, its characters, like Tomoko, she's got a lot of issues, but they're issues a lot of people go through, and you can, with therapy and you know, and just growing up, you can kind of gently grow out of them. The people in Welcome to the NHK are much more, they're past adolescence for one thing, and all four of them have different mental problems, but they're all much worse than Tomoko's. Like, they are...
Yeah. I think, I would say, like, a difference would also be that they go out of their way in Watamote to show you that her, right now, in her life, the only person she's really impacting with her terrible dysfunction is her brother and her mother. That's kind of it. Mm-hmm. Her classmates literally do not notice that she's there. They go out of their way to show you. Her classmates basically don't know she exists.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to NHK, I think, is much more directly saying you are a drain on society because you're like that. Like you're being irresponsible. You worthless sack of shit. Like,
yeah, and because
you're
going to
playgrounds and taking pictures of 6 year old kids.
Yeah, they actually do stuff that impacts people and hurts them more. Yeah. Tomoko is sort of like, this is benign and everybody goes through it. Welcome to the NHK is like, you have grown into a poisonous plant.
All right. Ronan Willis asks, do you think anime offers an opportunity to discuss subject matter that wouldn't be featured in other mediums? Well, of course. I mean, anime is a very unique medium. But I think this stuff specifically, this is the kind of show that I think you could have it like in English live action or whatever, and no one would produce it. It would not get made.
Would it be some indie movie or something?
Maybe, but I don't, like... Well, I said, like, I think the show's a little long and maybe gets a little repetitive. I still think it needed to be, like, 10 episodes or so. Mm-hmm. You know, a movie I don't think would really capture it all, just due to runtime.
Right.
But I think this is the kind of subject matter that... like, anime shows don't get canceled after 2 episodes due to low ratings.
No. Well, and I also think that just if you're talking about, like, American live-action sitcom television, I think Mike Toole in his article about Watamote pointed out, like, very few shows go so far to show how irredeemable the protagonist is and how little they actually have to offer. I mean, in... Our pop culture, you know, Homer Simpson is dumb and a bit of a drunk sometimes, but he does have redeeming qualities about him, and so does the dad from Family Guy. Even the most schlubby lead has something going for him, and I don't really think you can say the same thing about Tomoko.
Yeah, sure. I think I would agree with that, I think.
And because there's such an emphasis of having sympathetic characters in Western screenwriting, it honestly drives me crazy, because it is possible to have completely antipathetic characters. It's just that that's very rarely explored in our media because, I don't know, people don't like it or it cuts too close to home.
Well, that comes back to the whole, like, you know, this is the most common complaint about something like Evangelion. It's like, well, I don't like the characters. Well, you know, my response
really
to that is...
Well, yeah, how are you supposed to like... How are you supposed to like a clinically depressed 14-year-old adolescent?
Right, you know? Sure. You know, and this, you know, Watamote's not all that far from that.
I hate the main character from Slam Dunk, and you're supposed to like him.
Sure, right. But the thing I always say in response to that is, I don't have to like your characters. I just have to find them interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's it. That's the only thing that matters, is whether or not they're interesting. And in both cases, the characters are interesting. So, you know, that's, yeah. But, I, you know, this is the kind of show that wouldn't get made here. And only got 12 full episodes because it's anime. Stern Ifunken asks, would you say the sorts of dramatic irony in Watamote and Flowers of Evil are in some way comparable? I think both shows have kind of an understanding of misanthropy that is fairly unflinching and unkind to those who are like that. That's the only real comparison I think I could draw.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure what... I remember it's not like... I never really thought of Flowers of Evil while watching Watamote, except at the points where Tomoko, at a couple places, just starts devolving into, you're all made of shit, and I hope you die as shit, and I hope you come back as shit. And I'm like, oh, hey, it's What's-Her-Fuck from Flowers of Evil.
Right.
But apart from that, like, I think they have, even with the... depressing real high school setting and stuff like that, they have such different messages. I think they have such different themes and focuses that it's a little, and tones, I mean, it's a little incomparable. There's similarities, but the overall goal and tone is so incomparable that you know,
I only watched 2 episodes of Flowers of Evil, so I really can't comment.
I can't comment either because I'm still behind on last season. I haven't started watching Flowers of Evil yet.
Yeah, I still need to catch up on that.
Honestly, the things that pop up when I think of other things that I would compare Watamote to are actually things like Russian literature. Things like...
You would, well, Paul.
Like, well, Lermontov, you know, like Hero of Our Time kind of stuff, and possibly some sort of like snooty French philosopher stuff. Like, I definitely get a very Jean-Paul Sartre nausea feeling from watching this show.
Right, yeah. Yeah, like I said, you know, my go-to thing was, oh, it's the Bell Jar. Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mr. Mega Millions asks, based on your overall impression of the series, would a possible sequel be able to improve the anime or do more harm than good? I would like to see more, but I would like to wait for that to be written. I don't want them to do filler or anything like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do want to see more. I want to see her, you know, get little victories here and there, but yeah, I don't. It's not a show that needs filler anymore.
We got some unrelated questions here, but I am curious to bring this up. Rhetorical Noise asks: firstly, thoughts on the Animego Bubblegum Crisis Kickstarter?
Well, I commented on that thing that it the first draft of it was a big mistake. They actually just put up a new draft today, which took into account basically everything that we were talking about. But the first draft was, and I mean, I don't know how much detail I should go into on this, but Animego is trying to release Bubblegum Crisis on Blu-ray. And I mean, for the last few people that care about Bubblegum Crisis, and the plan was to release the original series. And if it hits this goal, then add Hurricane Live, which is the music videos they made, and then add, if it hits this goal, then add, you know, Holiday in Bali. And then if it hits this goal, add French subtitles. Whoopee. And this seems like a big mistake because the virtually anybody who is going to contribute to this thing probably owns Bubblegum Crisis at least once, if not twice. Mm-hmm. I own it 3 times.
Right.
And so why would we purchase this if we're not going to get everything?
Right.
And especially when they want to, you know, use the terminology of Ultimate Otaku Edition. Like, just put everything into it and make it a higher goal. And they did that. Now the goal is 80K. And if they do that and you reach it, then you get everything. It's the entire package, which I think is the way to go. But again, this feels a little bit like this is a sort of a pre-order, not so much a, I don't know, not so much, you know, what Kickstarter, at least in my mind, what Kickstarter's about, but it seems like Kickstarter hasn't been about that for a long time.
Well, Kickstarter's about famous people not having to spend their own money on their vanity projects.
Yeah,
that's it is now, yeah.
Zach Braff or whatever that is. Yeah.
I definitely have to agree with Gerald on this one. Animego, if they were smart, what they should have done is gone back to their old pre-order model that they used with things like Urusei Yatsura and Yawara, where you just plunk down $100 and you get the big fancy thing with all the bells and whistles.
Yeah, I think
people have a different expectation from Kickstarter. So that initial draft getting leaked looked pretty bad for them.
Well, he put it out there and said, hey, give us some feedback.
Yeah, that was him. Like, he... Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't a leak or anything. And then he put it out again and said, hey, here's the redo. There are no stretch goals. This is the goal to meet, and this is it. Like, that's it.
So, Gerald, you said you own Bubblegum Crisis 3 times. Does that mean you have that horrible release that came in, like, a PC software box with jewel cases in it?
Yep. I had that somewhere. I think I sold that. Someone actually freaking bought that from me.
Wow.
And, God, way back when. And then I've got, like, the super-duper first edition of a 90s comic book cover release, the holographic and all that, and then I've got the other release too. And so, yeah, if I buy it again, it's going to be the last time. This is, so supposedly the last time.
Yeah, right. There'll be another time.
well, the people that care about Bubblegum Crisis are, aging badly. Yes. So.
Sure, right. Okay. Also asks, he says, you should talk about Heroes of Cosplay and Fangasm. Justin doesn't watch that stuff, but many of your guests this week do.
What?
Well, I do, and as a result, Hope does.
Yep.
Yeah, that's going to be a conversation between the two of you, because I don't watch that shit.
You guys don't, so neither of you watch it. I guess maybe he was talking about Mike, because unfortunately
most,
Mike
the most
be.
I've seen of it is the Vine that you posted where they were saying this is the Kentucky Convention Center or whatever it was, and it was Anime Expo.
Yeah, Heroes of Cosplay was largely composed of B-roll footage from AX.
They abused that B-roll until it wept. And
but we actually have been watching Fangasm, and it's awful.
Worse than Heroes of Cosplay.
It's worse than Heroes of Cosplay.
But not in a fun way.
It's predicated on a lot of falsehoods. One is that you are a special snowflake that no one understands if you like Spider-Man and Star Wars. The other is that Stan Lee still has anything to do with the comics industry, which he does not. The most recent episode featured them all being really excited to pitch comic book ideas to Stan Lee.
You say featured. That's not entirely accurate. The last episode's content was entirely and only about them coming up with comic ideas to pitch to Stan Lee. Like, they filled an hour with that somehow.
Oh, and then it ended on a cliffhanger of they didn't show all of them pitching comic ideas to Stan Lee. The cliffhanger was, wait till you see the next pitch to Stan Lee. Like, it's so... And Stan Lee is just, like, old and just like, oh, this is a great idea. And you just...
He calls everything interesting.
Yeah. That's very interesting. Yes.
He's a 90-year-old man. He doesn't probably know what's going on.
He's held together by ancient Egyptian alchemical rites at this point.
Yeah, he's denture glue and, oatmeal at this point.
See, but the impression I got from your tweeting about it and Mike tweeting about it was Fangasm is one of those things that proposes the odious and toxic idea that somehow your entertainment fandom entitles you to play identity politics, and I find that just grotesque, personally.
Oh, yeah, totally.
So, this idea that you are a special person for watching this multi-worldwide billion-dollar franchise that hundreds of millions of people consume is... I don't like that idea either.
Agreed. And no one on the show... I mean, there's one guy who seems like he's... maybe two guys that actually seem like they're actual honest-to-God nerds. And they're both fucking... well, they're losers. Like, they're weird losers.
Yeah.
And
let's hide from the other guys and read comic books.
Yeah.
Okay, they're the guys... all the other ones, all the other, like, sort of disingenuous, want-to-be-on-TV, populist nerd annoyances, work really hard on the stupid waste-time internship projects they give them. Like, they really care, and they're like, oh, this is really important because reason it's not actually important at all. And the other two guys who seem, like, more like actual socially dysfunctional dorks who maybe are way too into a thing, be it Star Trek or whatever, don't do anything. Like, they don't give any craps at all. Like, on their internship projects, they put in the minimum amount of effort, and they're like, meh, meh, meh. Which is not laudable by any means, because they're not doing it because they seem to be self-aware that the show is dumb and pointless, and so is the internship. They're doing it because they just seem to put no effort into pretty much anything.
Pretty much, yeah.
What is the ultimate goal of the show? Like, do they win anything?
Don't know.
Once again, it's a rudderless piece of shit. Like, it's no direction.
They win a kiss from Stan Lee.
He's going to tell you when he created Spider-Man. That's going to be it. There's no direction. People don't get voted off the island or anything. There's no competition. It's just put a bunch of nerds into a kind of remarkably shitty apartment that I think is in the valley somewhere. They're not in a nice house. Like, normally these reality shows, they put them in kind of a nice house. No, this is a really kind of junky apartment.
They filled with little
Funko Pop toys.
Funko Pop
it's
toys.
All Funko Pop toys, like, everywhere.
So does the winner just get to leave that place then?
Yeah, right. That's the thing, is if you win Fangasm, you don't have to be on the show anymore.
Yeah, the losers are liquefied and fed to the next generation of Fangasmites.
Yeah, right. Speaking of things about nerds, I meant to bring this up a little bit earlier, because it sort of dovetails with Watamote, but there's a movie that came out this week. I think it's in select theaters today, but you can get it on Amazon Video On Demand. It's called Zero Charisma. We watched this earlier this week. And I watched it on the recommendation of, like, Devin Faraci, who said it was, like, the best movie about nerds ever made. And I don't think he's wrong. It's not a great film, but if you hang out with nerds, especially gaming nerds, tabletop gaming nerds, you gotta see this movie, I think.
Why is that, though? Explain to me why I would have to see something if I'm already living it.
Okay, well,
what's the appeal?
I think the rest of the movie's kind of, it's a little weak, but they build the lead character, who is the angry, super self-serious dungeon master guy. Sort of, he's got the neckbeard and everything, but he's not a parody. He's an incredibly well-realized version of that guy that everyone winds up in a gaming group with. It's very realistic. I have never seen such an accurate portrayal of the exact type of nerd that he is. Mm-hmm. The rest of the movie is basically sitting on his shoulders, and the plot doesn't... it's okay. It's not
all held together with rubber and string to this very well-realized character.
Right, and basically the story is a guy who's sort of king of his super pedantic, argumentative, angry, controlling dungeon master guy who is really into death metal and came up, scoffs at Dungeons & Dragons because he came up with his own system that's even better. And, that kind of thing. It's this guy, like...
That character is me!
Right. a tourist nerd joins his Dungeons & Dragons group. Well, not Dungeons & Dragons, but whatever. Joins his gaming group. And the portrayal of the tourist nerd, who is I hate to use the word, it's a hipster, joins his gaming group and things go bad. I would say, like, if you spend a lot of time around nerds, you self-identify as a nerd, I think you should definitely see it. It's like $7 to rent on Amazon, and it's worth seeing.
I saw a trailer of this, and I wasn't sure what to make of it, because I've never been, like, into tabletop, and so I wasn't sure, like, if this is something that, if you don't know tabletop people, you might not really get this, or if it's just more general than that.
Well, I wasn't really into tabletop gaming until I joined an anime club, and this guy is also an anime club. very much so. It's a very specific type of dork that most people have run into, or unfortunately maybe are. I would highly recommend it. I think it's worth seeing. It's very flawed, but the lead character alone is worth seeing it for if you're a nerd. all right, moving on. Rich Pandich asks, forget Watamote, more importantly, Mexican food leftovers for breakfast, yes or no?
Not nachos or anything like that. Those things don't last.
Mexican food doesn't reheat very well, largely. Like enchiladas, maybe, but
I never have leftovers whenever we have Mexican food. We always eat it all. So there's
Do you really want to start your day by putting a cinder block in your belly?
Yeah.
Get up.
I also suppose I'm thinking there's a little place called Cielito Lindo right near my house that actually does breakfast burritos, but I guess she was specifically saying leftovers, not actual Mexican breakfast. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, the best is.
And to answer Rachel's question, yes, I would punch a kitten in the face to solve world peace.
Okay, then. All right. Sifting the question. Angel X03 asks, can we take solace that Watamote didn't involve bullying in the story, or could that be included for a more complete picture? I am glad it didn't.
Yes, very much.
Mm-hmm. I don't want an explanation of why she's like this.
I think it would have made her a little bit too sympathetic, maybe. Yeah. And that was not what they were going for. They wanted to show that she is also kind of a shitty person. And you cannot, it's really hard to call someone a shitty person when they're bullied, because that is our issue of the day.
The phenomena of bullying in Japanese schools is a little different from the kind that we experience over here in the West, from what I understand, though. So it would be kind of different from our expectations in the first place. There definitely is like the element of neglect, in the sense that, as Zach already mentioned, she is basically invisible to her other classmates, and that does become a point at some points in the manga.
But through nobody's fault but her own. Like, I think it's really key that they didn't include bullying, because there's enough fiction out there that's about that, and usually, like, it's a downtrodden, like, less fully realized nerd that you're supposed to immediately identify with, just because they're being pushed around by usually a not at all fleshed out bully, like a very cliche, you're different, so I hate you, which attributes this specialness to the nerd that, you know, like, oh, they're mean to him because he's special, and they're a mean bully. And it's always, you know, like, the reality is, like, some people are mercilessly bullied, of course, like, that happens, but there are many people out there that are just like Tomoko that were not bullied, they were just, like, genuinely kind of awful people, and they were ignored. It happens much more often, and it becomes about nobody but her, and her problems that are caused by her neuroses, and not any other, like, outside factor that distracts from that and becomes cliche and, you know, not as honest.
Yeah, well, I think including, like, bullying would turn it into a completely different show that is about someone who is bullied into being a paranoid narcissist rather than someone who is just that way. Mm-hmm. And those people exist. And I don't necessarily need to see a show about how bullying turns someone into a twisted monster or whatever. I'm more interested in something that doesn't only want to make excuses for the behavior of the lead character. That wouldn't be as interesting, I don't think.
You can make
that show, but it wouldn't be as interesting.
Well, they have. Like, I've seen the bullied nerd who becomes evil, or the bullied nerd who becomes special or whatever a million times. I don't need to see it again.
Yeah.
And it's usually not that impactful. Like, it usually leaves very little impact.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, actually, that wraps us up. Big thanks to you guys, Paul and Gerald, for stopping by. It was great to have you.
Thanks very much for having us.
And help, as always.
Hi.
Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Paul, Gerald, and Hope for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest by the band The New Division. You can check it out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us a rating and review. We'd really appreciate it. And we'll see you all next week.